And a good Friday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, X, and Facebook. Don't forget that you can take the show with you 24/7 on demand by checking out the Nick Craig Show in your favorite podcast app. You can also listen online by visiting the website nickcraig.com. Our show this morning is brought to you in part by Melissa Gott and her amazing team over at The Law Group. Visit them online, lawgroupnc.com, or give them a call, 910-251-6088. We'll have more from them coming up a little bit later on in the program this morning. Well, there, of course, this has been a busy political week here, not only across the state of North Carolina, but across the country. A lot going on. Government shutdown, we continue to track that this morning, now into its 38th day. However, there are reports and it is seemingly indicated that senators are set to stay in Washington, D.C. throughout the weekend. That lends itself that the shutdown is coming probably the closest that it has been to an end. Typically, the senators are in D.C. Monday through Thursday. Many of them leave Thursday night or early Friday. However, most are still in D.C. as of right now, at least according to reports. So that is potentially lining up a vote to reopen the government, potentially as early as today. Could come sometime over the weekend as well. So that, of course, is going on. We continue to track that. Election Day 2025 across North Carolina, municipal elections, but in other states, as we talked about earlier in the week, whether it's Jersey or New York City, the state of Virginia, out in California with Prop 50, some pretty high stakes elections on the ballots. And as we've done our analysis here, kind of looked into what happened on the Wilmington City Council election. I did a podcast yesterday. I'm one of the three individuals on a podcast called The Three Guys Podcast, which is produced and hosted by the Wilmington Standard. It is myself, Ben Schottman, who is the news director over at WHQR. That's the local NPR affiliate, and Rule Sample, who owns and operates the Wilmington Standard. And would encourage you to go and check that out. It is interesting to get the analysis from Rule, Ben, and myself on focusing primarily just on the Wilmington City Council election and the mayoral race. So you can check out the Three Guys Podcast in all of your favorite podcast apps. You can check it out on YouTube as well. I'll throw a link to it over in the show notes at patreon.com/Nick Craig. And so the analysis continues, and I think, you know, makes a lot of sense that the analysis is continuing for Republicans in general. As you know, you take your losses in 2025 and figure out how to move forward heading into 2026. And that leads me to a pretty interesting article that I read yesterday over at the Washington Examiner. The author on it is James Antel III. And the headline is this: What Will and Won't Matter in the Midterm Elections from Tuesday's Results? And I think that's what a lot of folks are asking themselves this morning. I think that's what a lot of conservatives, a lot of Republicans are asking themselves. Is what we saw Tuesday night, is that a analog? Is that a parallel of what we will see as voters make their way out in November of 2026? And so I want to read through this article because it makes some interesting points. Appreciate your feedback and comments as well. You can drop us a live line on any of our live channels this morning, YouTube, Rumble, X, or Facebook. After the fact, get a lot of comments on the YouTube feed, some emails and tweets as well. So always appreciate the feedback and comments, and I'm very curious to see what individuals' thoughts and what they think of not only the municipal elections in 2025. No question about it, if you are a conservative, if you are a Republican, Tuesday night was not a good night. We went through that. I'd encourage you to check out Wednesday's podcast for a kind of a deeper dive breakdown, and the Three Guys podcast that I did yesterday for additional analysis on that. The big question is, and I don't know that anybody can say full 100% without a doubt, that we have the answer to the question: is 2025 an analogy, a parallel, an analog of 2026? I don't know that we can say that at this point. One thing that I have learned from being in the political scene as long as I have been, whether it's on the media landscape side, being involved in some of the ongoings within party politics, elections and politics change very rapidly. What is a big issue today, like For example, flights at 40 major airports, one of them being Charlotte Douglas, which is a major hub for anybody flying out of Wilmington. A lot of flights, depending on where you're traveling, go from ILM to Charlotte Douglas, to Atlanta, Hartfield Jackson, which is also on the list, to then go out through the rest of the country. What is a big issue today cannot be a big issue 3 or 4 days down the road. And for example, if the Senate votes and a couple of Democrat senators vote with Republicans on this CR in the next couple of days, that problem will go away. And so what is a major story now might not be a major story in a couple of days, and vice versa. What isn't a major story becomes a huge story and can an impact and can have ramifications on elections. So let me just say this, and I haven't heard anybody say this. I've seen a little bit of it on CNN and MSNBC. Anybody that says they can tell you for certain now that the midterm elections are going to be a blowout for Republicans based on what happened in 2025 is either woefully ignorant themselves, or is just purposefully, I guess I'll use the word, lying to their individuals. Now, is there a possibility that the 2026 midterms look like what we saw Tuesday night across the country? Yes, absolutely that is a case. Nobody can say for certain. You can draw some parallels, you can draw some analogs from what happened, but you can't say for certain that is what is going to determine. And, you know, this is one of the things that is always said, especially for a major race, which is what the midterms will be, even though there's no president on the ballot. The issue or issues that are likely to decide the 2026 midterm elections may have not even happened yet. There's a strong likelihood that they have not happened yet. I mean, we are talking about something that is set to happen 12 months from now. So it is impossible for anybody to say, oh, Tuesday night, absolutely, we are going to see the same results a year from now. It's just foolish. We know how short, unfortunately, the attention span is for people now, and the issues that are likely to define 2026, there's a strong possibility that they have not even happened yet. So I want to dig a little bit into this article over at the Washington Examiner, looking at these midterm elections, looking at what happened and what will and what won't matter. Again, the article by James Antel over at the Washington Examiner. And so let's just start reading. Let's go through it. Tuesday's election results struck fear into Republicans' hearts about what they might mean for the party's fragile congressional majority a year from now. Democrats felt a similar loss a year ago when Republicans won unified control of the federal government. Now, for the first time in President Donald Trump's second term, the roles are reversed. The predictive power of off-year elections is mixed, and next year's races will play out in a much wider swath across the country. Something should concern Republicans about the 2026 midterm elections, while other worries are overblown. He then goes into the headline or the heading, "No guarantee of a 2026 blue wave." Democrats won nearly every important election this year, a nearly clean sweep. The outcomes weren't surprising because Democrats consistently led in most polls and were at least in the margin of error in the Virginia Attorney General's race, but the size of some of these wins was greater than expected. And we talked about this on the show on Wednesday. For example, Democrats led in the New Jersey gubernatorial race, a state that has consistently teased and then disappointed Republicans in recent years. The GOP's hopes for an upset rested on gubernatorial nominee Jack Cittarelli overperforming his poll numbers like he did in a close 2021 loss. This time, however, the Democrats' lead was much smaller. But Representative Mickey Schiarelli, the Democrat, outperformed her poll numbers and won the race by more than 13 points. And we talked about this on the show earlier this week, and I just want to pull up some of the polling averages so that we can look at this. The RCP, which Real Clear Politics, for folks that are not following this stuff and eating, breathing, and sleeping politics, is a phenomenal resource. What they do is they take a whole bunch of polling and they average it together. So you get what is called the RCP, or the Real Clear Politics Average. It is a good way to look at trends and kind of see what is going on. And so the Real Clear Politics Average, based on all of the polling data that was available in the weeks ahead of the New Jersey gubernatorial election that happened on Tuesday, showed this race to be a pretty close one. The Real Clear Politics Average was showed the Democrat with about almost a 3.5-point advantage, which is still a substantial advantage, no question about it, but it's close. It is close enough that it would concern, if you were the Democrat in this race, or you are somebody that is pushing for the Democrat in this race, a 3.5-point polling average is close. And I mean, most polls have a margin of error anywhere between about 2 and 4 points. So it very much brought the New Jersey gubernatorial race into the discussion of, can the Republicans upset? So you look at this average and then you look at the final result, and I mean, it's a bloodbath. Jack Cittarelli lost by 13-plus percentage points. I mean, so the polling was, it's clear to say that the polling was obviously dead wrong, because you don't go from a +3 advantage to a +13 advantage with the polling not being dead wrong. But this was a race that seemingly was close, but in practicality was nothing like we saw in 2021, and showed a seat that Democrats handedly won. I mean, the margin in the New Jersey race was more than the margin was in the New York City mayoral race, and very close to what we saw in Virginia, which was an absolute bloodbath for Republicans. And so that is an interesting kind of data point to look at. And, you know, polling is polling. It's only as good as the people that you're talking to. It's only as good as the responses that you are getting from individuals. You know, you go back to 2016, when political polling and pollsters, as they're called, took a major blow in terms of their reputation. Because as you saw, as we all saw, every single American, whether they liked it or not, in 2016, the polling could not have been any more wrong. The polling showed that there was almost there wasn't a snowball's chance in hell that Donald J. Trump would beat Hillary Clinton in the 2016 presidential election. If you were strictly looking at the polling, strictly looking at the data available from those pollsters, you would have made an educated guess that Hillary Clinton would have been the 45th president of the United States. And that would have been backed up by the polling. That obviously did not come to fruition, and the polling was completely blown out. And since 2016, and it's been almost a decade at this point, we're going to flip the calendar over here in less than 2 months. Since 2016, there has been some serious questions about political polling moving forward. And we've seen even in some other races where the polling is just, it just doesn't play out. I mean, what is understood beforehand based on talking to likely voters, what is understood beforehand based on the data, just does not play out. And that is there's no better example of this than what happened in New Jersey. When you look at some of these polls, I mean, just the day before, 2 days before the election, you had one poll showing this is a 1-point race. The Hill, Emerson, major poll, a 2-point race. Suffolk, another major poll, 4-point race. Quinnipiac, Qantas Insights, 3-point race. I mean, these polling results all showed a pretty close contest. It didn't turn out to be one. And so there's a couple of questions you can ask. A, was the polling just garbage? Did the polling just suck? Did it not? Didn't hit the right voters? Maybe too oversampled Republican, middle-of-the-road voters in New Jersey, and didn't sample enough Democrats, because there are more Democrats than Republicans in the state of New Jersey. So that's a question to ask. The other question to ask is, just did Democrats way overperform in the state of Jersey? And so those are kind of the two questions that you would ask, leaving some of the results on Tuesday night. And so this poll talks about that. This article over at the Washington Examiner talks about that. It then goes on to say, nevertheless, the biggest races on Tuesday were New Jersey, Virginia, and New York City. None of the aforementioned states voted for Trump in 2024 at the peak of the conservative swift in the electorate. It is no shock to see that Democrats won, especially after some of the corresponding progressive movements. That doesn't necessarily mean that there will be a repeat of the 2018 midterm elections when, during Trump's first term, Democrats gained 40 House seats. That year, Republicans had to defend 25 House seats in districts Hillary Clinton won in 2016, and eventually they wound up losing 22 of them. Next year, Republicans will be defending just 3 seats in districts that former Vice President Kamala Harris won in 2024. About 4/5 of the House majority represents districts that Trump won by at least 12.5 points, and roughly 3/5 hail from districts Trump carried by more than 20 points. Even in 2018, the last time there was a blue wave, Republicans lost 0 seats in districts that fit the latter description. That doesn't mean that the House majority is necessarily safe, however. Democrats only need to net 2 seats to flip the chamber, as Republicans are still defending 19 seats in districts where Trump won by 7.5 points or fewer, following a loss of 15 of 23 such seats in 2018. However, the fight for the majority will take place in redder territory than Virginia, New Jersey, or New York City. And that is a very accurate summation of what is coming forward next year. And, you know, there's a lot of discussion, of course, on the United States House of Representatives, Congress, because that is where Republicans have the slimmest margin. It's only a 3-vote majority for Republicans right now in the House. And so if you are a Democrat looking at what do we have a higher likelihood of flipping, it is, of course, going to be the United States House, because when you look at the Senate seats that are up in 2026, it is not seats that are good for Democrats. When you look at the elections that are taking place, one of them, of course, is here in the state of North Carolina. When you look at those states and you look at the seats that Democrats have to defend, it is going to be very tough, and you'll hear me say this a lot. The likelihood of Democrats flipping the United States Senate in 2026, I would say, is very low. Is it impossible? No. In politics, it is a fool's errand to say that something is impossible, right? We heard a lot of that in 2016. We heard a lot of that in 2020. It was impossible for Biden to win. We heard a lot of it in 2024. Once again, it was impossible for Trump to win. And what we have seen time and time again is that that is not, in fact, the case. That there is a very strong possibility that things can happen. And so as you look at the Senate seats that are up, this is from 270 to Win, which is a great data website. You know, you've got a lot of toss-up seats. You look at North Carolina, where you're going to have a major battle likely here between former Democrat Governor Roy Cooper and former head of the North Carolina Republican Party and RNC Michael Whatley, possibly. There's still a primary to play out, but that's what the race is looking like. You look at a state in Georgia where Democrats have to defend a congressional seat. You look at a Senate seat. You look at Michigan, where they have to defend a Senate seat. And then, of course, Maine. But even without some of those toss-ups in there, according to what the polling looks like right now, Republicans would still have a 51-vote majority in the United States Senate. Now, that's this number, 51, is assuming that Republicans don't win in Georgia, North Carolina, Michigan, or Maine. And there is a possibility that they take one, if potentially not more than one, of those seats. So it is going to be very, very tough, just from a pure math perspective. And again, this is what I'm looking at. I'm not talking, this is not me vibing a vibe election casting or anything like that. Looking at the data, looking at the seats that are available in swing states like North Carolina, in swing states like Georgia, it is going to be very, very tough for Democrats to take control of the United States Senate, even if they have a phenomenal night. And I mean, I think this will let me do this with the math. Just assume that Democrats win all of these seats, Michigan, Maine, North Carolina, and Georgia. They're still 2 votes down. they're still not going to have enough to get the majority. And them winning all four of those Senate seats is probably not very high. Could they win three? There's probably a stronger likelihood of that. There's a possibility that Republicans pick off at least one. So at 49-51, then you have to look at Democrats flipping a seat. For example, you look at a Senate race that's coming in Ohio. Even if they flip Ohio, it's still a 50-50 Senate, and that would then bring in the Vice President of the United States to be the tie-breaking vote. So then you have to flip another Senate seat. Where are you going to do that? Texas? That's not going to happen. Nebraska? Not going to happen. Iowa? Not going to happen. And everything else is solid red. Florida, South Carolina, Alabama, Mississippi, Tennessee. And these races aren't going to be close. The only three that would be, you know, close would be Texas, Nebraska, and Iowa. And the likelihood of any of those three going to the Democrats is incredibly low. So they have to win all four of the more swing seats, Maine, Michigan, North Carolina, and Georgia, flip a state like Ohio, and then pick off another seat in what would only be described as very strong states for Republican Senate candidates. So I say all of that, and I stand on my soapbox to bring you that information, because that's just the math. It's not what I think is going to happen. It's just how the math is likely to play out for that. And the reason that that is relevant is, yes, Democrats are going to put themselves in a position to be competitive in many of these Senate races. The North Carolina Senate race could potentially be one of the most expensive United States Senate race that has ever happened in the country. There's rumors about what some of that spending could be like. You could be looking at hundreds of millions of dollars, billion dollars in a Senate campaign across North Carolina. There's going to be a lot of money flowing into this state, a lot of money flowing into a state like Georgia on both sides to try and really shore up those seats. But with the math being as hard as it is for Democrats in the Senate, you, of course, would put a lot of emphasis and put a lot of attention on the United States House, where the math is much easier, where you've only got to pick up three seats. Republicans have to defend 19 seats and try and pick off a couple of House districts across the country. Again, you don't need many to get control of the House. And for Democrats, getting control of the House would be a major, major blow to the Trump administration. I wouldn't go as far as saying lame duck. I don't really like that term and that phrase, but it would very much hamper the ability of this administration to do a whole hell of a lot in 2020 through the remainder of 2027 and 2028 ahead of the next presidential election. So that is, of course, the reasoning and the question as to why this is so important. Back to the article. Non-presidential year turnout is still a major problem for the GOP. And of course, we saw this across the city of Wilmington. That said, there was still a smattering of results in redder areas such as Mississippi, Georgia, and parts of Pennsylvania that also went poorly for Republicans. Overall, Democrats retained their Trump-era advantage among higher propensity voters, while the lower propensity voters who supported the president in 2024 are largely absent. This is a reverse from the administrations of former President Bill Clinton and Barack Obama. Both faced even worse initial midterm elections than Trump did. When Republicans won their first House majority in 40 years under Clinton and Democrats, they shed 63 House seats under Obama. But turnout went up in the presidential election years, and both Democrats were elected. Clinton fairly comfortably so, and both with north of 300 electoral votes. It remains to be seen whether that dynamic plays out for Republicans in 2028 without Trump on the ballot. House Republicans experienced a larger net gain in 2020 with a losing Trump at the top of the ticket than they did in 2022 while winning a narrow majority without him. But either way, it won't help Republicans next year. Trump's 2024 voter mobilization effort was helmed by Elon Musk, for whom the president is estranged, and Charlie Kirk, who has since been assassinated. And I thought, and it was kind of interesting, is, you know, so much is, I'm kind of in the thick of everything that's going on. I hadn't really thought about the impact of Elon Musk and somebody like Charlie Kirk heading into the midterm elections. It would have crossed my mind at some point, but I appreciated James Intel putting it in the article over at the Washington Observer, or the Washington Examiner, I should say, because it hadn't really clicked in my mind yet. And that could very well be a big problem that the Republicans face. Now, you know, the article says that Musk is estranged from the president. You know, they've been seen together at a couple of events over the last few months. I don't know that I'd go as far as to say estranged. Does Musk come back around and get involved in 2026? I think there's a pretty strong possibility of that. Obviously, and unfortunately, Charlie Kirk will not have that opportunity after a leftist gunman shot and killed him earlier this year. So that is not a possibility. But the question will be, his massive organization, Turning Point USA, does that group have the organizational structure? And I don't mean this in any disrespect to Erica Kirk, his wife, but does she have the ability to lead that organization to strong mobilization heading into the midterm elections? And I think that's a fair question to ask without, you know, I'm not, you know, kicking her while she's down, not being disrespectful in any way, but it's a valid question. I mean, the TPUSA has lost its leader. Charlie Kirk was assassinated because of his political ideals. Does that organization have the ability to have somebody leading that entity? And I know that Erica is now the head of it. Does she have the ability to lead that entity to widespread voter turnout in 2026? That is, I think, a very interesting point, and I'm glad it was brought up, and we'll have to wait and see what that organization does. It would be hard-pressed for me, and I think it should be hard-pressed for anybody, to argue that TPUSA, Charlie Kirk's organization, did not play a major, major factor in the 2024 elections. The voter mobilization efforts that TPUSA went through, you could, I think, accurately say, and you of course can't tell for certain one way or the other, but I think you can accurately say that it may have been one of the major reasons that Donald Trump was successful in 2024. You're never going to be able to say that for certain because there's no data point that can back that up, but it's hard to argue that it didn't have a major and massive impact. And that obviously could be lacking as we head into next year. We will continue with this article over at the Washington Examiner. The headline over there is a very interesting one. What will and won't matter in the midterm elections from Tuesday's results? We'll continue the conversation and read through on that coming up. Plus, we'll get to some of your comments as well as they come in live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, X, and Facebook. Don't forget, and this show is only made possible thanks to our great supporters, whether you support the show financially on Patreon, which I can't thank everybody enough for that, or Melissa Gott and her team over at the Law Group. And I do want to let you know that when legal challenges arise, make sure you put your trust in the Law Group. Since 2003, their experienced attorneys have provided high-quality, affordable legal services across the eastern half of our state. Whether you're facing a divorce, navigating real estate transactions, or maybe you're in a position where you need a strong criminal defense, the Law Group has your back. Their dedicated team ensures your questions are answered and issues are resolved as quickly as possible. Great news, folks. They're located in our community, located right in downtown Wilmington, and just a phone call away at 910-251-6088, or you can visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. Give them a call, 910-251-6088, or their website, lawgroupnc.com. The Law Group, experience and dedication you can rely on. We appreciate Melissa Gott and the amazing team over at the Law Group for their financial contributions and their financial support here of the Nick Craig Show. All right, we'll grab a quick break and return coming up after this as the Nick Craig Show rolls on a Friday morning, streaming live on YouTube, Rumble, X, Facebook, and 24/7, wherever you get your podcasts. And and a good Friday morning to you. Welcome back to the Nick Craig Show. Thanks for starting your weekend off with us, taking a quick look at the forecast heading into your first full weekend in the month of November. Temperatures actually look really, really nice across southeastern North Carolina this weekend. Temperatures today, Friday, in the mid-70s. Saturday and Sunday, upper 70s, close to 80 degrees in some areas, but ahead of a big cool down as we head into early next week. High temperature, just 55 on Monday for Veterans Day. On Tuesday, 51 degrees. Lows will be 32. I mean, literally at freezing as we head into earlier next week. Then temperatures rebound a little bit as we head into the middle and latter part of next week. After all, it is in fact November across southeastern North Carolina, so to come expected with the time. All right, we are going through an article this morning over at the Washington Examiner. The headline there, what will and won't matter in the midterm elections from Tuesday's results. This article published yesterday by James Antel, who writes over at the Washington Examiner. And it's an interesting piece, kind of doing some analysis and going through what exactly happened on Tuesday night, at least a little bit of what happened on Tuesday night, and what Republican and conservative voters and strategists, what will they take forward into 2026? What is relevant and what is not? And this, you know, it calls out in the next portion of the article something that's very accurate. It's inflation, stupid. One aspect winning Democrats had in common this year was a focus on affordability. Successful Socialist Democrat mayoral nominee Zohran Mamdani, in particularly, ran against New York City's notorious high cost of living. Inflation helped Trump win in 2024, but now that he is the incumbent, the issue is his liability. And inflation has decreased from its 41-year high under former President Joe Biden, but it remains above the rate preferred by the Federal Reserve. We talked about that with Vance Ginn last week. The price increases are also cumulative, so even as inflation decreases, prices remain higher than they were several years ago. Many adults have no memory of previous high inflation in their lifetime. Worse for Republicans is that inflation is difficult to control without weakening the job market. The last major bout of inflation was curbed by interest rate hikes that led to a recession and a 10.8% unemployment. Although the economy subsequently experienced a boom, even a successful monetary policy won't return consumer prices to 2019 levels. And, you know, that's a very interesting point and is absolutely one of the major drivers for voters. Prices. I mean, it's inflation. It's the economy, stupid. And while I think Donald Trump has had some success in lowering prices, I mean, gas prices are way down. There remains the growing concern that his tariff policies and the tariff policies of his administration are going to hamper the economy. I mean, you had a major Supreme Court hearing this week over whether Trump has the ability to use some of the Emergency Powers Acts that he has used to implement wide-ranging tariffs all over the country. And I mean, you had the administration admit in the setting of the nation's highest court, the U.S. Supreme Court, that most of the burden or a lot of the burden of tariffs are paid for by the American consumer. And with that being the case, there is no question about it. The finger is going to be pointed at Trump and at the Republicans. There's nowhere else to point it. You can say yes. The economy is still recovering from the Biden administration. Sure, people don't care. Biden's gone. He hasn't been in the Oval Office for a year. Is some of this holdovers from some of his terrible monetary policy? Sure. But that only lasts so long. I'm not a big fan of, oh, it's still the previous guy's fault 2-3 years into the administration. Not only do I not buy that, I don't think the vast majority of the American populace does either. And so the economy undoubtedly could be the largest issue that drives people to vote in 2026. As I mentioned at the open before the break, that election is a long time away. There is a lot that can change between now and mid-October of next year as we head into the election in early November. A lot that can change. Who knows? I'm not even going to try and sit here and pretend. One thing, however, that is always on the tops of voters' minds, regardless of what is going on domestically or internationally, is the economy. Are they feeling the pinch in their pocketbook? Are they looking at their bank account and wondering, how the hell am I going to make my mortgage payment this month? How the hell am I going to put food and groceries on the table this week? I mean, I saw a tweet yesterday. I'll pull this up real quick. Didn't intend on bringing it up on the show, but it's kind of relevant with this conversation. I saw this post from this group called Bar Chart. They're a data analytics firm, and it shows that U.S. household debt has jumped to an all-time high of $18.59 trillion. $18.59 trillion. This chart goes all the way back to 2004. You can see a peak between 2007, 2008, 2009. Of course, the economic disaster and crisis that took place then, the household debt started going down as we headed into the mid-2014s, started ticking back up, and has been on an upward trend pretty much ever since. Credit card debt, U.S. consumer debt is at record highs. So we're going to catch up with Vance Ginn in the next couple of weeks and talk about consumer debt because it's a major issue. A lot of folks are heavily leveraged on credit cards right now. And those things, I mean, I will be the first to admit, I don't carry credit card debt, so I don't know what the interest rates are, but I believe some of them are 18, 25, 30% interest rates on these credit cards. I mean, it's like trying to dig yourself out of a hole with a freaking plastic spoon. I mean, it just doesn't work. And so the debt, the lack of financial flexibility, the lack of discretionary income, those are things that are absolutely currently on the minds of American voters. It was on their minds in 2024, no question about it, and will likely be on the minds of those same voters as we head into 2026. So back to the article. Trump has been pressuring the Federal Reserve to lower interest rates, and his tariffs provide Democrats with a tangible point to blame him for the rising cost of living, even if their actual effects on prices overall is somewhat disputed. In a headline, it is hard to imagine the outlet running about higher income tax rates, as NPR reported Wednesday, saying, quote, "Yes, Trump's tariffs are raising billions, but at a steep economic cost. There may be a pivot to come," according to the Deputy White House Chief of Staff, James Blair, who told Politico after Tuesday's election, quote, "The president is very keyed in on what's going on, and he recognizes, like anybody, that it takes time to do an economic turnaround. But all of the fundamentals are there, and I think you'll see him be very, very focused on prices and the cost of living." And that very much could line up, depending on what this decision is from the United States Supreme Court on some of these emergency tariff actions that the president is taking. I mean, I don't know what the Supreme Court is going to do. The Republican justices didn't seem to buy the arguments being made by the federal lawyers for the administration. I'll be the first to admit that. If they strike out those tariffs, I think there's a strong possibility that the administration drops it. Now, I'm not saying they're going to drop tariffs all across the board. They don't have to. There are certain levels of tariffs, steel and aluminum, things like that, that can remain in place and will likely remain in place. But these across the board 10, 15, 20% tariffs with the, you know, and it's so weird to look at. You say the struggling economy, and we've got some comments coming in on our Rumble live chat saying, quote, you know, "The stock market is great, but your average middle class can't invest." It's an accurate statement. And you know, the investments that they might have are their retirement, which is great. I mean, you look at your 401k, you look at your Roth, and you say, oh, okay, that's doing well. You know, maybe it's averaging 10, 12, 15% a year. Sure, that's great. But you don't have access to that money right now. Not only in some cases can you not legally access that money right now, but you don't want to touch that money right now. And there's a reason that you set aside money when you're working for retirement, so that you have some level of a nest egg and don't have to work until you're 90 years old. That's the whole point. So that is, you know, it's interesting to look at the stock market, which, yes, has been doing very well, and then look at the overall feeling on the U.S. economy, which is, no, it's really not going that well. And so that's kind of an interesting thing to note. Culture did not trump the economy. Going back to the article, while the sample size is limited, Republicans have been unable to counteract economic anxieties by appealing to social issues, as Democrats are generally on the wrong side of public opinion and show little signs of moderating. Democrats, however, mostly downplayed social issues when speaking to the wider electorate. Republicans, by contrast, partied as if it were 2021. The White House faulted Lieutenant Governor Winsome Earl Sears, the Republican from Virginia, for an excessive focus on transgender ideology, and her losing gubernatorial campaign in New Jersey's Cittarelli for not paying enough attention to pocketbook issues in his. If this trend continues next year, it will be a problem for the GOP. It then moves into the government shutdown, saying, "The government shutdown hurt Republicans in this year's elections." Now, let me say this. I, for the most part, I've pretty much agreed with everything in the article thus far. This is the only portion of this story that I break from. I don't fully agree with the argument that's made in these couple of paragraphs, but I'll read it anyway. "The government shutdown hurt Republicans in this year's elections. Polls are starting to more clearly show that the GOP gets more blame than Senate Democrats who refuse to vote to reopen the government. Federal workers in places such as Northern Virginia are already predisposed to dislike Trump, and as you can imagine, with them being now not getting paid for the last couple of weeks, they're only going to hate Trump and hate the Republicans even more. But the impasse is likely to be long before the next elections. The 95-96 shutdowns likely benefited Clinton, but Republicans retained control of Congress afterwards. Republicans finally won back the Senate in the next election year after the 2013 Obamacare shutdown, and maybe there will be more shutdowns or ones closer to midterm elections. However, if this shutdown persists, the country will face much bigger problems than the next congressional election." And this article was written yesterday, or it was probably written Tuesday night into Wednesday morning. So through the day on Wednesday. So we now have a pretty strong idea that the federal government is going to likely be reopened in the next couple of days. At least that's what some of the journalists in and around the United States Capitol are saying, that senators are staying in for the weekend. So there's a possibility that this is dealt with. I don't agree that the shutdown hurt Republicans across the board. I do agree that I mentioned this on Wednesday's show, in and around the Virginia area, especially Northern Virginia, where many folks who work in the District of Columbia work for the federal government live, because DC's not really that big and it's stupidly expensive to live there. So many of those folks do live in portions of Northern and other areas of Virginia. There's no question about it that had an impact there, right? Because you are immediately feeling the impact. When you look at the, you know, municipal elections here across the city of Wilmington, I don't think that the federal government shutdown drove Democrat voters out and gave them the victories that they had. May it have been a tiny little fraction of a part? Sure. I mean, there's no question about it. It was not the major driving factor, I don't think. I would suspect if you were out during early voting or out on election day and asked people, "Why are you coming out to vote?" I don't think you would have many people saying, "I'm voting for the city of Wilmington mayoral race and city council because of the federal government shutdown." There is very few things. There's really no correlation between the two. Different in Virginia, but again, across the country, Republicans took an ass whooping pretty seriously there. So the article wraps up by saying, "The podcasts didn't matter. Heated debates are occurring about the soul of the Republican Party and the direction of the conservative movement, many of which surfaced in the days leading up to the election. Social media influencers played a disproportionate role in them." These debates are important, but some have blamed intra-conservative fighting for the election loss. However, suboptimal the timing, few of these elections were close enough that even particular influential podcasts could have swung them. The 2024 Trump campaign made better use of new media environment than its Democrat rivals, but this was more of a function of the candidates' appearances on these platforms than the hosts that hosted them. Candidates' association with podcasters who say controversial things will also be made into issues in future campaigns. But nothing said on an edgy podcast or at a conservative think tank in a previous day decides who the next governor of Virginia will be. So this is the article again over at the Washington Examiner, the headline, What Will and Won't Matter in the Midterm Elections from Tuesday's Results. I'll throw a link to that in the show notes over at patreon.com/Nick Craig, where you can support the show financially if you believe that you are getting some value from the show, if you want to continue to support the operation here day in and day out, some of the most extensive local political coverage that you'll find anywhere in southeastern North Carolina. patreon.com/Nick Craig, $5-$10 a month. You can set a custom amount as well if you believe it's worth a little bit more. Appreciate everybody's support over at patreon.com/Nick Craig. So an interesting article, a lot to chew on, a lot to ponder on as we head into the weekend. And, you know, this time of year becomes interesting. Thanksgiving is just a couple of weeks away, and there is a pretty substantial gap. Let me say this whole thing and it'll make sense. There's a pretty substantial gap between Thanksgiving and Christmas where folks generally tend to kind of tune out. Now, I don't mean that like audiences go away, but people generally, they're busy. They're worried about the holidays. They're trying to figure out what their PTO schedule is going to look like for the remainder of the year. Many folks will be traveling for Christmas and traveling into the new year, traveling for Thanksgiving. Folks just kind of generally tend to disconnect, at least in my experience, following political cycles in media for the last couple of years now. The time between Thanksgiving, which is just a couple of weeks away, and the end of the year is just not a super active one. There's not going to be a whole hell of a lot going on politically. You are going to see the North Carolina General Assembly. They've got a couple of more voting days coming up this month in November. Probably not a lot's going to happen and go on there. So that's going to go kind of by the wayside. There will be a question, and we'll see with the government shutdown, as it looks like that is set to be resolved in the coming days, what the new date will be for the clean continuing resolution. If you'll remember, the current CR that has been voted down by Democrats now 14 times only kept the government funded until November the 21st. Obviously, at this point, the Senate is not going to vote to keep the government funded till the 21st. That's literally 2 weeks from today. So we would be back in the exact same boat 2 weeks from now. So what's going to be very interesting to see, if a couple of Senate Democrats do cross the aisle and vote with the Republicans, what's the new date? Do they kick the can down the road to the end of the year? Do we see a shutdown right around Christmas again? That will, of course, get people engaged. Or do we see something in maybe mid to late January, early February, somewhere in that time frame? So that will be interesting and could very much determine and decide what people's level of involvement are. But I will say this, things are going to slow down dramatically in the next 2 months. Folks, busy, lot going on with the holidays, a lot of travel plans, just a lot going on. For folks that are kind of passerby or political observers, this is not on the top of their mind right now. Plus, the elections just happened. Now, the midterms, of course, are going to kick off fiercely as we turn the calendar into 2026. You're going to have primaries all across the state, all across the nation. Some of those will be interesting. That'll come our way in early March of next year. And then, of course, it will be the long run from March all the way until November, especially in a state like North Carolina, where that very influential and very important Senate race will be driving a lot of the conversation and driving a lot of the vote. So the analysis will continue. I'm going to continue to kind of get my thoughts together. I have been watching and reading kind of both sides to see what the general takeaway is. I will end with what I started with Wednesday morning. Tuesday night was an absolutely brutal election for Republicans. There's no sugarcoating it. There's no rosy-colored glasses. There's no rainbows and unicorns to make it any better. Republicans got their asses handed to them Tuesday night in North Carolina, in Virginia, in New Jersey, and in New York City. California, I mean, the list goes on and on. It was not a good night. How much of that translates over into 2026 remains to be seen. The economy will be a major issue. Some of these, in the article, it talked about some of these more social issues. These are the 80-20 issues that we've talked about in the past. You know, men and women's sports, some of this, some of just the most insane, you know, all these transgender discussions and conversations. They're 80-20 issues that people overwhelmingly are not in favor of. Those don't really show up in these kind of off-year elections. The voting base is so small. The issues tend to be incredibly localized. Government shutdown in Virginia, in the state of North Carolina, crime in some cities, overdevelopment and growth in the city of Wilmington. Those bigger hot-button, you know, red meat political issues for Republicans, they just don't translate to local elections. First of all, nobody shows up and votes, which is a major problem. And they're just not relevant. I mean, men and women's sports has nothing to do with the Wilmington City Council elections. The City Council has no authority over the school board. The school board is its own entity, and the county commission is the one that funds the school board. So the city of Wilmington has literally nothing to do with the school system. So an issue like that has no face value in a municipal election. Crime, it's a different story. And I think, you know, going forward, it's going to be interesting to see what the new 7-0 Democrat Wilmington City Council does with crime, does with homelessness, because we know that these issues are relevant, are important. So it will be a smattering of local and state and national issues as we head into next year's elections. And I look forward to sitting alongside you throughout all of it, and we'll bring you the most comprehensive, the most in-depth political analysis and coverage of local races. It's New Hanover County Board of Education, New Hanover County Commission, Brunswick County Commission, Pender County, the North Carolina Legislature, a major Senate race. We will have the most in-depth analysis and coverage with candidate interviews and polling and all of that coming up for you right here on the Nick Craig Show. One other quick thing before we get out of here this Friday, something that I do want to put on your calendars for next week. If you are around and are if you're around predominantly next Wednesday, that's November the 13th, there is an event that is taking place here in Wilmington that I hope folks can attend. This is coming up Thursday, November the 13th here in Wilmington. Full disclosure, I am a contractor for the Carolina Journal. I work with the John Locke Foundation. I host a morning radio show for them in Charlotte called the Carolina Journal News Hour. There is a poll presentation that is taking place in Wilmington on Thursday, 11:30 to 2. It is a completely free event that is taking place. Donna King, who is the deputy or the publisher of the Carolina Journal, Mitch Kokai from the John Locke Foundation, we'll be discussing some of those poll results. I may jump up there and give some insight here or there. It's taking place at Johnny Luke's in Wilmington next Thursday, 11:30 to 2. Sign up for free to get a ticket, free lunch, learn some information, get some data from the poll, and all of that is heading your way next Thursday, the 13th at Johnny Luke's. If you want to come hang out, see the great folks, Don and Mitch over at the Carolina Journal and John Locke Foundation, are incredible wealths of knowledge. For those that have been longtime followers of me, Donna used to join me on the radio show every Thursday morning to break through and walk down what's going on in North Carolina news. I'll be there as well. So that's Thursday, November the 13th, Johnny Luke's. I'll throw the link to that in the show notes as well and on my social media channels. Head on over to the Nick Craig Show on Facebook or on X, and I'll put the link to that up there so you can get a ticket now, RSVP, and come we'll kind of get some data, learn what's going on in polling across the state of North Carolina. One more final thing before we get out of here. The Three Guys podcast, a podcast that we do, that I do pretty regularly over at the Wilmington Standard. It is myself, Ben Schottman, who is the news director over at WHQR, and Rule Sample, who is the mastermind behind the Wilmington Standard. We did about an hour of election breakdown and analysis. Would highly encourage you to check this show out. It's called the Three Guys podcast. It's available in all your favorite podcast apps, or you can go to the Wilmington Standard. The Wilmington Standard, it's a singular, not plural, thewilmingtonstandard.com. Check out the most recent episode analyzing the Wilmington elections. A lot of plugging here at the end of the show. So that's going to do it for another busy week here across the Nick Craig Show. Thanks to the Law Group and Melissa Gott and her team here in Wilmington for their continued support. Visit them online, lawgroupnc.com, or give them a call, 910-251-6088. We'll keep track of everything that goes on over the weekend and have the latest for you coming up Monday morning live, 7 a.m. YouTube, Rumble, X, Facebook, and 24/7 wherever you get your podcast. Have a great weekend. We're back with you Monday morning right here on the Nick Craig Show.